Welcome along to episode 6 of the Midweek F1 podcast. Everything that you need to keep across the exciting world of Formula 1. So Midweek F1 is the last word on the race just gone and the first look at the Grand Prix coming up. Now don't forget, if you are watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe, add a little comment because it's good for the algorithm. And wherever you're listening to your podcast, click follow because that's good for us as well. Thank you very much. I'm Nicola Hume and as always, I am joined by the man, the voice, the Formula 1 commentating legend that is Ben Edwards.
Thank you. What a fascinating night in Saudi Arabia. You just couldn't take your eyes off it. So much was going on. And that's our first job, is to look back at the Jeddah Grand Prix.
Yet then we're going to be joined by this week's very special guest. Now, along with Ben, today's show is going to sound a little bit like Drive to Survive, I reckon.
Yeah, there is a connection. I'm looking forward to this. Yeah. We're also going to have our regular We Need to Talk About section. And we usually talk about the drivers that might be struggling a little bit. We're talking about the teams for the first time this time.
Then we've got our very own Midweek F1 Prediction Championship of the World. Who chose wisely in Jeddah? Can I give a spoiler alert? I smashed it. I'm quite proud of myself. We're going to discuss that a little bit later on.
Well done. Well done. We'll then dive into what we might expect in Miami at the next stop in the 2025 F1 Championship, which is getting very intriguing race by race. So let's get stuck in.
Right. Let's do it. I'm going to say it's getting really exciting because I think we now have a three-way drivers' championship fight. I mean, Oscar smashed it, had an amazing drive, but Max is back. Max is back in. I mean, it got a little bit punchy and a little bit, edgy towards the end there, but he's back. He's in fighting form. And I genuinely think we could be in for a hell of a season. Your thoughts, please, Ben.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think the pace that the Red Bull had was very, very impressive because they were struggling at the early part of the weekend. You know, you could see that. Max was anxious about whether they were going to have that race pace. But what he did in both qualifying and then in the race, and yes, we'll get into some of the specific aspects of what happened, but I think you're absolutely right because McLaren and Red Bull seem to be quite similarly matched at the moment. It does depend on the circuits, but as we go forward, of course, things may change. But it was a fascinating weekend. I mean, Lando Norris, oh, what a tough weekend for him. The qualifying went wrong. We'll talk about this a bit more. But, some of the things that he did in the race as well, I was a bit, getting tied up with Lewis Hamilton, his pit entry exits. It was all a bit marginal. And whereas Oscar looked totally in control of whatever he had to do. He just utterly looks in a great form. All the way down the grid. Interesting. I mean, George Russell was a bit frustrated after the race with the Mercedes pace, but Antonelli, his teammate, actually did a very good job. I thought he was expert. As a youngster, he's impressing us all the time. And well done to Williams. Great to get those double points, and actually working together. That's rare. See teammates working together. But it was good. It was good. They did a really good job with that. So, yeah, we've got plenty of specific things to talk about. But overall, it was a very interesting weekend.
Right, well, let's get into the specifics, shall we? Because, as always, Producer Jim comes up with a whole list of things for us to discuss. So go for it, Producer Jim.
OK, we've got to talk about the first corner. It was a big call for the stewards. However, should Red Bull have given the place back to Oscar straight away? Piastri only won by 2.8 seconds. So with no 5-second penalty, Max wins, right? Yeah. Discuss.
It was tricky, wasn't it? Because now everywhere on social media, like the last couple of days, has just been full of photos and recordings and different camera angles and all that kind of thing. And I think it was such a difficult call. It's such a shame it was a 5-second penalty. If they would have just given that place back, it would have been a completely different race and I think Max would have done it. But it's a tricky scenario because I can see from Max's perspective how he thought he was ahead and it shouldn't have been an issue. So then obviously thought, if I just hold fire, it might be all right if I just carry on. But then obviously just not thinking about the fact that no, he wasn't ahead at the apex and he should have got that penalty and he should have given that place back. And it makes it so tricky.
It does. It does. No, it was fascinating. I mean, it was a great start off the line by Oscar to get alongside and into that left-hander. Oscar did it very cleverly. The only thing was, if he could have left just a tiny bit of space to the edge as they came out of the first apex, then he would say utterly, totally, that he had given a little bit of space to Max. He didn't. I still think, though, it was the right penalty, because if that had been a wall there, then I think that Max would have actually not come off the brake and tried to go around, he would have had to brake a bit harder and tuck in behind. So I think you know, it did deserve the penalty for what Max did. I do understand why he tried to go for it. It's totally his way. But after that, maybe they were actually thinking, we're in clear air, let's just stay out, rather than drop back and be, you know, trying to follow another car. You never quite know where the car's going to work better. Is it going to be working better in clear air? They're always happier when they're in clear air. Yeah, it didn't work out in the end for them, for Red Bull, but it was a fascinating battle between them throughout. And I'm so glad they both survived. If they'd hit each other in that first corner, it would have changed the race completely.
It was a tricky one, because I think even if Max would have slammed the brakes on, where was he meant to go? There was nowhere else for him to go, really. Like, if he would have slammed the brake, because it's literally that
opening
lap.
If you're racing against somebody and they're in front of you, you have to slow down and tuck in behind them. That's the way it goes.
Oh, it was too close for him to be able to tuck in, though. It's not.
Well,
it wasn't quite a tuck enough.
No, but I think he knows how to race. The thing is, they both know how to race, and they both have a similar attitude. That's what's so impressive, is that Oscar's got just as much of that sort of determination to get the play, especially at the start and into corners, as Max has. Whereas some other drivers will sometimes just give a bit of space to make sure it all works. It could end up with them hitting each other a bit more often this year, you know. You're talking about the championship battle. It could end up the two of them knocking each other, and that might help Lando. Who knows?
Yeah. Producer Jim.
Well, let's talk about him. Lando Norris on the back foot after his qualifying crash. Was his comeback drive the best he could have done, or did he miss out on a podium? Discuss.
Go on, Ben, I'll let you go first.
He was quick. He was very rapid. He was doing some very quick lap times. But a couple of things he did. When he was behind Lewis Hamilton, and he did it twice where he didn't overtake him at the right place, and it allowed Lewis to use DRS to get back past him. And particularly the second time, and Lewis played it very cleverly. But Lando, come on, you know the game. You've been in Formula One for a while. You're no rookie. And so I was a little disappointed when he made those moves. And if he had got past Lewis first time, I do think there was a chance he could have got a podium. Frustrating for him. But having said that, as I say, and the mistake in qualifying, that was painful. I really felt for him in that one, because he's got such talent. You know, he has such ability, and I still think he may well come back, but he's gone through a difficult patch with those three in a row races.
Yeah, without those two sort of wasted laps trying to overtake Lewis and then messing it up, I absolutely think he could have been on the podium. I think he was in full focus, doing really, really well when it came down to the race, not so much when it came to qualifying, but when it came down to the race, I think he was on top form. But what's the saying? Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice. Wait, other way around. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Yeah, so he shouldn't have messed it up twice, is basically what I'm trying to say.
Fair play.
Jim!
Right. Ferrari nail a 2-second pit stop and Leclerc comes alive on his second set of tyres. Are Ferrari now officially back? Thank you, Brian. Discuss.
That was such a nice pit stop, wasn't it? Literally pull in, whoop, whoop, stunning. It was an absolute work of art. And if I'm right in saying, I think that's the fastest pit that we've seen this season so far. I mean, we've seen in previous seasons 1.8s, 1.6s, etc. But I think, yeah, that 2-second pit stop was absolutely stunning. And also, we're all becoming big fans of Charles Leclerc's radio messages.
yeah, with his engineer. That was lovely to hear some of that stuff. But they worked so well together. And as you say, that pit stop was absolutely superb. That's what we love to see. And yeah, well done to Ferrari to get that podium. That was a really good performance.
Yeah. Jim?
Teamwork makes the dream work for Williams. Carlos Sainz uses DRS to drag Alex Albon away from Isaac Hadjar to double points finish. Why do we not see this more? Discuss.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's early on with their working together as teammates now with Carlos, with Alex Albon, but I think they worked extremely well and it was good. And I actually do think that as a combination of drivers, Carlos and Albon is a really good mix. They have slightly different talents in slightly different directions. But the fact that they were working together for the team, if they can keep that up, I think there's a real opportunity for them to keep scoring well. Yeah, they're not championship contenders, but if they can keep well up in that line of midfield, Formula One teams. I think that's fantastic, don't you?
Yeah, I think that was pretty solid. And it was quite exciting to see, seeing how managing to tow him along and then seeing that Isaac just couldn't quite get close enough. Obviously, both of them getting DRS and then both of them just going, ugh, and then Isaac going, ugh, and getting so close, but not quite getting there. Although I am proud of Isaac for managing to stay in the points. He's a good boy.
He did a good job, but you're absolutely right, because he's an aggressive driver. He'll go for overtakes. But the way that the Williams teammates worked each other, very, very well done, I have to say. And Isaac was just, as you say, frustrated in the end, but still doing a great job, yeah.
Yeah. Jim?
Okay, time for rookie watch. Bortoleto nearly takes out his manager, Fernando Alonso. Discuss.
That was scary for a moment. I thought, oh no, I can't believe this. He's going to take out his manager. But it was just, he just didn't have that awareness. And it must have been embarrassing, wasn't it? It must have. I wonder how it was for them afterwards, yeah.
I think that was like a global, everyone making the same noise at the same time. I think I made exactly the same noise as Crofty when I was watching it on Sky. I'd, oh, so close. Yeah. And also there was a really nice quote from Fernando Alonso today, saying that maybe he's not going to be fed on the flight on the way back.
Well, bless thank him. Goodness they didn't actually take each other off. I mean, yeah, we were able to go, phew.
Jim?
We're five races in, and we have three drivers covered by just 12 points. Judging by the frosty post-race interviews, this could now turn into a classic season, right? Discuss.
It's exciting.
It is exciting. I think it really is. Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, and our predictions are going to get harder and harder, aren't they?
I feel like this is brewing to become anyone's game. I mean, you're looking at the top three. I mean, I know we're literally five races in and there's been a couple of hiccups from Lando and people go, oh, I don't know if he's got it in him. But also at the same time, he might pull a few more races out of the bag and then you go, where did you come from, you cheeky little bugger? And he'll just come out of nowhere and then get straight back up to the top again. And then I feel like Max will do the same, even though it's not quite the fastest car. And Oscar's just going to be Captain Cool for the rest of the season, I think. That's his strength, isn't it?
It is his strength. He has an amazing ability to keep it calm all the time. Yeah, I'm very, very impressed with the way he's doing that. But yeah, as you say, it's very unpredictable, you know, and Max is so talented and he's won these titles before. He knows every little tiny amount. And actually, you know, his move at that first corner last time, I'm sure part of that is assessing how things are being looked at. Are they being dealt with differently? Right, he'll move on. He's very clever. Understanding if the rules are moving on a little bit, he will work them to their limit, but he will keep focusing on it.
Yeah. Should we do a little social media roundup? Personal favourite of mine was Jennifer Lopez. Don't tell me you've seen the pictures, Ben. Tell me you've seen them.
I haven't.
Because, right, so basically Jennifer Lopez turned up in what could only be described as a pink version of Britney Spears' Oops, I Did It Again outfit, a full PVC catsuit. And I know, as a woman, there's no way she can pee wearing that. There's no way she can pick, because it was just done up from the top. So she'd have to get completely fully naked just to go for a pee. She would have had a nightmare day. No liquids for J-Lo. No liquids. Poor woman. I need you to see the picture, Ben.
Yeah, I'll have to have a look. I will. That
it's
sounds
so
great.
Ridiculous.
Sounds great. Well, right. It's perfect. We've got someone we can ask.
Yes. Yes, we can. Right, let's bring on our special guest. Now, before we do that, I need you to subscribe, please, if you're watching on YouTube. Let us know your thoughts about J-Lo's outfit as well in the comment section below. And if you're listening wherever you get your podcast, then just click on the follow button. Right, let's introduce her.
Well, I'm very pleased to say we've been joined by Radio 5 Live F1 presenter, journalist and author and friend of mine, Jenny Gow. Jenny, it's lovely to have you with us.
Hi, I haven't come in a PVC all-in-one pink dynamic suit because I didn't have enough talcum powder in the house to be able to get into it.
Yes, that as well, because it's hot out there. How would she have got that on?
With a lot of help, I'm guessing, and will and determination. But my goodness, I don't actually know how old she is. I'm guessing 50s, mid-50s, late
Something
50s.
Like Yeah.
She looked incredible. And I mean, fair play. If I had that body, I'd try and put on a pink PVC all-in-one onesie. And Ben, I'm disappointed in the fact that you haven't seen those pictures yet.
I'll check it out.
Ferrari posted them everywhere.
Jenny, look, you've heard that we were chatting a bit about this race at the weekend. What are your thoughts? I mean, just off the top of your head initially, we've got plenty more to talk about. But you know, and do you disagree with any of the stuff we were talking about?
I mean, no. I think it was an interesting race. It wasn't the most exciting, but actually, in the terms of the last few, it had enough, just about enough to keep us busy and to make it dynamic. I thought it showed a lot when it comes to the championship and what we've got to look forward to. I think that's the most important thing, that the potential for this to kick off is right there. Mm-hmm. And we all knew coming into this season what an interesting and dynamic season it could be. The end of this set of regulations, when people change over and work on next year's car fully, and the fact that we've got three different teams in the top three means it's going to keep rolling on and they can't focus on next year. They've got to stay focused on this year. And I think that's another key point. But yeah, that battle into the first corner, you called it absolutely right, Ben. And, you know, Max is so astute. And I think Oscar is following his lead. And the two of them are going to battle it out. And sometimes it's going to go wrong. Sometimes the rules will not favour Max, but Red Bull are so stubborn. They were never going to give that pace back, were they? We were shouting at the TV, so give it back. Why would you not give it back?
Yeah.
And we saw, who was it? Antonelli overtake Hamilton, I think. And he gave the position back on that first lap because he knew what was coming. So why didn't Red Bull act then to save that race? As soon as they didn't act, they knew that penalty was coming, surely. It was a done deal.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you've reported on some epic championships over the years. Would you say this one has got potential to be the best of the best?
Oh, absolutely. I think we all thought that right at the beginning of this season, before even testing had happened, we all stood up and said, this is possibly the best season in F1 for a very long time, certainly in our generations, because it's got the personality, it's got the cars, it's got everything going for it. And the fact that you've got, you know, Max Verstappen trying to take his fifth consecutive title, and then you've got the might of McLaren, who just came from nowhere last year, and all of a sudden in Miami turned around that championship run. I think that dynamic is amazing. Mercedes trying their hardest to get back. And then, of course, Ferrari trying to be great again with Hamilton moving there. I mean, what's not to love about it? It's the season that I think is going to keep on giving.
Absolutely. Jenny, we've worked with BBC together for many years. But just tell us all, just remind us, how did you get into the passion of Formula One that you have?
Gosh, it takes us right back, doesn't it? So I used to watch F1, but I never dreamed that I would be in a position where I could report on it. I think I got into radio and journalism down in Southampton, actually working for BBC Radio Solent. So I am a BBC girl through and through, although I have left the corporation and gone to other commercial stations. But that was my love of sport. I loved it all. I couldn't get enough. And I eventually started working with Speedway teams in Bridgewater. And that opened my eyes to motorsport. And I loved it. So every sort of motorsport, when it came to rallying, motocross, eventually MotoGP, I got a phone call from the BBC saying, would you like to host MotoGP on the BBC? I was like, sure, I can do that. Yeah. And the following year, I got a phone call saying, would you like to do F1? And I was like, sure, I can do that. But the first time I walked into an F1 paddock was literally the first time I'd gone to a live F1 race. I knew no one. I hadn't met the team because I was just dropping in for the Canadian Grand Prix. It was in 2011. And if you can remember, it was quite a good race.
mean, that was an amazing race.
Yeah, I thought you'd know.
Yeah.
So my first experience was one of the most incredible races I've actually witnessed. And it was just joyous. And from the first moment I stepped in the paddock, I loved it. And I fell in love with it very fast. It wasn't just a crush. I married it.
Yay!
Great. Good for you.
And I've met some wonderful people along the way that I have not snogged. I have I just had the most amazing time and the most amazing privilege in meeting the most amazing humans.
Oh, I love that. I love that it's just, it's one of those you've just been thrown straight in the deep end at such an epic race, and then you've just taken it, grabbed it, hugged it, and stayed with it for as long as possible. And it's just moved you over to get better and better, to do more and more.
Well, thank you. It's one of the only times, I think, that all of the media in the around the pen, where all the drivers come to after the race, collectively gave Jenson Button a round of applause. So great was that race, and so amazing was his comeback. And I actually have a little model car. It's one of the small ones. I'll reach across for those people watching. Just crashed my desk. So it's McLaren Jenson Button 2011 winning car in a very small box that my lovely commentator friend gave to me. And it sits with me on my desk as kind of a good luck. I need to get it signed by Jenson at some point.
Yeah, you do.
I haven't done it yet. But yeah, it's very dear to me. And that race was simply incredible.
Because, I mean, you've gone from reporting, but then you've also very heavily been featured in Drive to Survive. You've been in the dark room, which I've heard, right? So I've heard from different people that have kind of featured in it or whatever, that it's all kind of set up at every race. So every race, there's just like a room with drapes, and then you just go in and report wherever you are, wherever you can. Is that right?
So for me, I started in 2021, which was, it was an okay season again, wasn't it?
It was
the most dramatic season ever in the history of F1 and motorsport. So it was under COVID restrictions still, and the team at Box to Box, who produce Drive to Survive, did an amazing job. They had to film it in such a different way than they would have chosen to, because they had to embed with a team. They couldn't go from team to team. They couldn't cover news stories on the fly, because they weren't embedded with Mercedes when George Russell sat in for Lewis Hamilton and was weeping on the side of the pit lane because he'd lost the win. There were so many moments that they didn't capture. But for me, it was kind of a bundle at the end of the season where you went in and did, I think, 4 records at the end of the season and had to think back to what happened in the first race. What was the dynamic coming into it? So it was quite hard to do, but I think they did a decent job.
You've also written a book about Formula One. I remember, actually, it's here somewhere. Let me have a look. Oh, yeah,
have you got it on your shelf? Yeah,
both going into our bookcases.
Yay!
Matchy matchy.
How to Read F1. And actually, it's great. It's you know, you've kept it nice and brief on all of the different factors about Formula One, different elements of it, kept it nice and short. And it's a great way for people to just understand and learn, if they're getting into it, what matters about Formula One.
Yeah, it was kind of came about in a strange way. The BBC contacted me again. I said yes.
Love
I actually said no at first, because I'd recently had a stroke and I couldn't read or write. So I thought, how am I actually going to make a book? That doesn't work. But the publishers convinced me that I could do it. And then I opened my laptop for the first time since I'd had the stroke, and had to learn what the keys were, how they worked, how to open Word. So it was quite a task, but actually it really helped me and reminded myself of the fact that, A, I loved Formula One and I wanted to be part of it, even though I couldn't travel, I couldn't do reporting. But it was a way of passing on the knowledge that I've been fortunate enough to gain along the way to people who don't know it. Or people who know it but don't know everything, because no one knows everything, let's face it. Although some people will tell you they do in the paddock. But I just think it's a book who it's a book which you can pick up whether you know F1 or don't, but it's friendly.
Yeah, it is.
So if you're not into F1 so much, and maybe your son or daughter is, then you can pick up that book and you can have a look in and go, oh, actually, that's quite interesting. And it's a real bond between the audience and what F1 is, hopefully.
Do you kind of look back on the book as even more of an achievement because you were going through such a tricky time and you just had your stroke and you needed something to focus on to get you going? So that's more of an achievement, not just writing the book itself, but writing it while you're going through such a tricky time and trying to get yourself back on your feet. So that must be something you're even more proud of than you could possibly be with just a normal book if you would have done when you were feeling well.
I still don't actually believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben, when you held it up, I was like, oh, yeah, I wrote a book and yeah. It's got my name on it. That's weird. It's a very tangible way of saying how far I'd got in my recovery. It took about a year and a half to be published since my stroke. So it's quite a fast turnaround. And I have to admit, I'd never thought about writing a book that was about F1. I don't pretend to know everything about F1. And there are some people in the paddock who really do know so much more than me. Ben is one of them. There are some journalists and others who are much more, I don't know, capable of writing a book and a book like this. And I actually phoned up one of my friends and said, look, I've been asked to do this, but I'm not sure I can do it because I'll feel like a fraud. And people in the paddock might react to it in a negative way because I'm not a writer. I'm relatively new in F1. I've only been there for 15 years. So I didn't feel like it was my territory. And he said, go for it. No one owns territory. Just go for it. If you want to do it, do it. So I did it.
Yeah, and well, how does it feel for you now that you're back out, you're back reporting? Are you back 100% feeling better?
So I'm not 100% yet. My voice still isn't where I want it to be. And words don't come as quickly as I'd like them to. Bearing in mind, that's what I did. It's pretty much all I did. And not to have the ability to recall those words as rapidly or as eloquently as I'd like to is really frustrating, but I'm really pushing myself. I'm going to Miami. I can't wait to be at a race. It'll be my first race that I'll go to this year. And it seems like it's taken forever, these first five races. I'm just like, come on, let's get to Miami. But with everything that's happened in F1 and the story being so good this year, I'm just so excited to get back and tell that story because that's what I love doing.
Yeah, so we're going to look ahead to Miami in a second, but we do have a bit called We Need to Talk About. And this week we need to talk about Aston Martin because it feels like, I mean, they've got so much money and so much potential. They've got Fernando Alonso and Lance Stroll, but Fernando Alonso, and there's so much potential in that team, but they're still just sat in seventh. I mean, they haven't scored a point since China. So what's going on there? Where do they need to pick up?
It's a really interesting one. And Jenny, we'll bring you in on this as well. But it is disappointing because it's a great team. There's some really talented people I know who work for Aston Martin. I'm surprised that they haven't made a bit more progress coming into this year. And I do wonder where it's going to go now, because surely so much thought is going into the new rules coming up next year in 2026. And a bit like you said earlier, Jenny, with some of the teams that are fighting for the championship, they're really going to have to think, how much do we put into this year? How much do we put into next year? For Aston, there's no problem. Put it all into next year, don't you think?
I absolutely agree. I think they've almost thrown in the towel already. And just the way that they're talking, the way that they're acting as drivers, as a team, it's a blur year, isn't it? They've got all the money, as you say. They've got all the facilities, and they've now got Adrian Newey. They've literally got everything they needed or wanted. And I just wonder, is this the last year we'll see Lance Stroll, in an F1 car? And I'm questioning, I look at his results It's hard to drive in F1. Obviously, I've not done it. But if you haven't got that 100% commitment, and I think he has at times been stunning. I think back to Monza in the rain when he was just amazing to watch. And you really saw the talent that could be, and the talent obviously that his father has seen in him and nurtured and grown. But I just wonder, how will the team go forward? They've got the best of everything. And they've also got Lance Stroll. And he's a very talented F1 driver, don't get me wrong. But we all know he is one of the last pay drivers there. And how long can he keep that going? How long will that will to compete be there? It's always been, is he really there for himself or is he there for his father? I think that's always been in the background of what we think. And I just wonder if his results continue to be poor, is this a way for them and him to part company in a way that's respectable? I don't know. How do you part company with your son? I've never known the answer to that.
I have absolutely no idea. I would have thought that, I mean, I would have thought this a few years ago, that he would have gone off to Le Mans or something like that and just, you know, stayed as a racing driver, but just under a different category. But yeah, he keeps coming back season after season after season. And I think, especially because we're seeing so many rumours about the fact that they want to buy Max, and even Fernando saying, look, I've got my contract is actually going further than my actual driving career, so he's still going to be part of the team. He then wants to be part of creating things and, you know, working on the drivers while he's there, even after he finishes driving, etc. So I think Lance is potentially the last piece of the perfect puzzle, if you will, that needs to be fixed. And I think maybe potentially at the end of this season things could be a change in.
Yeah, we shall see. I tend to agree. Yeah, we shall see. Well, it's time for us to start looking forward already to the next Grand Prix. That's the Miami Grand Prix in a couple of weeks. So it's not 1 week after another as it has been. But Jenny, it's great news to know that you're going to be going there. It's where Lando Norris took his first ever Formula One win, and to do it from fifth on the grid. And actually, I was looking back at, you know, the performances. Nobody's won it from pole position yet. We've had the three races. It's been won from ninth on the grid by Max Verstappen at one point. Lando's won it from fifth. It was won by, it was also won from third place by Verstappen, slightly a bit closer to the front. But it is interesting to think how this is all going to go when we know we've got such a battle on.
And it's a sprint weekend.
Yeah,
I just looked down and went, oh no. Okay. I mean, it's good on one way, difficult in another. It means even though the teams have got 2 weeks away from a track, which we all know is about 7 days for those who work really hard, they don't have much time to bring developments to the track and test them out.
But it was last year that McLaren brought so much development to that race, wasn't it? And I do wonder, when you've had three in a row like we've had, we may well see some technical developments appearing in Miami.
Yeah, which makes it even more of a gamble. How much do you throw on? Yeah. How much can you learn in just one practice session before going into sprint quali?
Indeed.
And if how you can get it right and not get it wrong. And as you say, McLaren flew last year from Miami. They never looked back. It was a changing point. And my word, does Lando need a changing point in this championship if he's going to try and battle for it, really?
I agree. Yeah, he's
mentally only 10 points back, isn't he? But yeah, that 10 points seems like a mile.
Mentality is going to be so important going into Miami, I think, where he's got that confidence of having taken the win last year, his first ever F1 win. But what do you think, Nicola? I mean, he's really got to get it together, hasn't he, for this next race?
And I think he will.
Yeah.
I think he will.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's going to take these next sort of couple of weeks and he's going to just, you know, relax a little bit, think about it. We know that he's comfortable. We know he's happy in Miami. We know that he will go in with a stronger head, I think. But the tricky part of the triple header is that once you're in your head, it's hard to get out of that headspace, literally 6-7 days later. That's really tricky. So now he's got the smallest bit of downtime. I think he's got time to kind of work on himself. And I think, well, actually, let's do it now, right? So we do our prediction championship of the world, okay? Now, here's how it works. Jenny, we need you to predict P1, P2, P3 and fastest lap. We know fastest lap doesn't get points anymore, but it does on this show. So no pressure, but Team Guest at the moment are currently standing P1. 28 points. There were some solid points that came from Jason Plato from last week. He predicted the Oscar win, so he got 6 points. So at the moment, Team Guest are sat with 28 points in P1. In P2 is me, which I'm so excited because I actually got all top three last week and I'm so proud of myself. So I got Oscar, Max and Charles Leclerc last week, so I absolutely smashed it with 12 points. Yay! And then producer Jim in at P3 with 20 points because you picked Piastri and Charles Leclerc, so you've got 8 points, Jim. Well done. And then you've got Ben, who's also in P3. So you're now level because Ben also smashed it last week because you picked Oscar, Max and Lando for fastest lap, so you've got 11 points last week. So, looking ahead to Miami, we're going to go Jenny first, P1, P2, P3, fastest lap, go.
Oh my goodness, this is really hard. I'm going to go with Verstappen, Piastri, Russell.
Oh!
Fastest lap, Piastri.
Oh! That's considering really, we've just had a whole conversation about Lando, you're not going to put Lando up there?
No. Oh! I think headspace might not be what he needs now, right
okay.
now. Because you're saying that headspace is good, but maybe headspace is bad. I don't know.
Yeah, either or. Yeah. Ben?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And to be honest, I'm really lost as to know how this could be. It could be so many different orders. So what shall I go for? Okay, I'm actually going to go for Max taking the win because he seems to be in such good form at the moment. So I'm going to go for Verstappen, but I am going to go for Norris this time, second. And I'm going to go for Leclerc third. So maybe something happened to Oscar that wasn't planned. I don't know. Fastest lap, I'll go for Oscar.
Oh, okay. So he's going to throw out a cheeky fastest lap before he does something wrong.
<Who knows?
laughs> Is that what you're suggesting?
I think I do think he may well win again, but I'm just changing the order a little bit.
Okay, right. Well, I'm loving this because naturally I'm going to go Max P1, and that's not because I've got a Red Bull contract. This is... no, Jim, don't
yes,
shake your...
Yes,
no,
it is.
It's not. It's because I think Max is back, and he's back with a bang, and I think he's going to go into Miami full of confidence and full of beans. So I'm going to go Max, Oscar P2, Lando P3. I think there's going to be a really close battle between Lando and Oscar. And I can just see them getting so close. And the last few laps, it's going to get quite dramatic. That's what I'm feeling. And then fastest lap, because I believe in him and because I know that this weekend is at Silverstone doing some testing in the RB19, I'm going Yuki. Come on, Yuki.
Definitely no Red Bull contract at risk. Can I just ask, out of interest, Max is due to be a daddy. I believe that's happening before or after Miami. It's very close.
It's imminent. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's going to sway what his season looks like, because we all know that being a parent, well, some of us know, being a parent is pretty tricky, and it's his first child. So let's see what happens with that.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, Max just doesn't sleep anyway, does he? Because he races and then he just goes straight on a sim and just is on a sim all night.
Sim time might have to be cut down.
Oh, that's true. Oh, poor Max. He'll be all right. We believe in him. Jim?
Right. Okay. Controversially, I'm also going to go for Verstappen top step because of the trend of the car going well where it went well last year with Jeddah and Suzuka. I'm going to go Norris second. He's got his head back. He won there last year. And I'm going to go Piastri third and fastest lap Leclerc, because I do believe Ferrari are back.
Are Ferrari back, or is just Charles Leclerc back?
It's a good question, that one. I think in certain ways, the car's working better. Yeah, Lewis isn't happy yet, is he? But it's a sprint event again. And last time we had a sprint event, he won the sprint race. So who knows?
Could you imagine?
Yeah, I know.
Lewis on the top step in Miami. I mean, know. that would be special.
Oh, the American fans will lose their minds. Right, now, as always on this podcast, we like to finish on either a random fact or a fun little story. So, Jenny, over to you. What you got?
So I can give you a random story, I think, which is partly embarrassing, but that's kind of who I am.
That's perfect.
So I'll take you back to the Canadian Grand Prix in 2011, my first race. And it was the longest race in F1 history. Rules were changed after that, so they couldn't have as long a race, but it went on for over 4 hours with plenty of stops, plenty of rain, all sorts was thrown at us. And in radio, you have to just cover, you have to fill. So it was a really good lesson in filling. But of course, I didn't know anyone in the paddock. And I'd heard a rumour that Colin Farrell was there, movie star, A-lister. And apparently he was down at Lotus. So I traipsed down to Lotus, looking like a wet dog. Shook myself off before I went into the hospitality. And I saw a guy that I thought was the PR guy. And they don't wear badges or anything. You just have to know them. So I went up to him and said, excuse me, would it be okay to talk to Colin? Because I knew he was there. And he looked at me and was like, yeah, that's fine. So I went over to Colin, asked very nicely if I could speak to him and if he could come outside. Now, he put on this whole thing about having laryngitis, couldn't speak. I was like, look, you've got to come outside. I need to fill. Which he did, which was very nice. I went outside, embarrassed myself totally by asking him, how are you? He said, I'm fine. He asked me how I was. I said, I'm really wet. Apparently, that's not the thing to do. It was just at the launch of Twitter, and that was a mega faux pas. So that was embarrassing, but not the most embarrassing thing to happen. Because I subsequently, shame, I subsequently, after speaking to Colin, found out that I didn't ask the PR guy at Lotus because it wasn't the PR guy at all. It was actually one of the Senna family that I embarrassingly... Yep, I went up to Bruno Senna and asked him if I could speak to Colin Farrell.
No way!
Wow.
So no wonder they were like, yeah.
Yeah, go for it. If I'd actually found the PR guy, Andy, he probably could have said no. But Bruno, yay. So yes, very embarrassingly. But we are now friends. We went out for dinner that weekend. It was very funny looking back. But how do you know who PR people are?
You don't.
Unless you've never been into the paddock.
Yep.
So yeah, and I didn't have a producer, Jim, I could have done with you by my side leading the way, but I was just freewheeling in the paddock for 4.5 hours by myself without knowing anyone.
Oh, that's a great story. That's a great story.
So well embarrassing.
That would fully make me panic.
Well, well done. Well, that's it for this week. It's been a good one, but do join us next time when we'll be looking at what went down in Miami and looking forward to round 7 at Imola.
Yeah, don't forget to subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Let us know your predictions as well for the Miami Grand Prix. Jenny, thank you very much for joining us. You've been an absolute star, and we'd love to have you back again towards the end of the season. That would be marvellous.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Great fun. Thanks.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.